Hey, what's going on? How was lunch? How was mine? Pretty good. Yeah. These mics are always different. Okay. So you guys want to get your seats here quickly. If you're outside, you want to get in here. And this weekend has been, how's this weekend gone so far? You guys getting that shot in the arm? I'm excited to see the stories and the results and the testimonials that are going to come out of this event. So, man, I was listening to this morning and just tell you what, that was a powerful session. It was incredible. And So I have the opportunity right now to bring on somebody who's become a good friend. Toby and I met about 3-4 years ago, but we've been doing business going back all the way to 1999. He runs he's a managing partner and co-founder of Anderson Advisors. They operate out of Las Vegas. They're one of the top firms in the country that provide legal services and entity services. They set up LLCs, corporations, estate trusts, business tax services. And he, Toby's a unique guy because he's got just incredible amount. He's like one of these, how many of you, okay, so maybe you can relate. You guys remember those smart kids in school? I don't know how he was in school, but Toby's really smart. He's one of these really smart guys. He's very highly intelligent, but he's also very personable. And I've just seen that he has a heart for people, so we've been able to develop a neat relationship. We don't always agree on everything, and sometimes and that's part of a good healthy relationship. And he's somebody that I learned from just because of his, he's an estate attorney and an entity attorney, and he's an expert in business taxation. And if you're building business and if you're, building your implementing some of the things that I was talking about last night where you're actually building that wealth and developing and as that asset base grows, there's a point where you've got to start implementing some more higher level strategies, okay, and putting entities in place and learning how to be a little more savvy when it comes to structuring your affairs and your taxes and stuff like that. And so we really like to have Toby to share with you some insights on that, because again, our goal for you guys here is that for you guys, like I was saying last night, to become part of the ownership side of society. In other words, we're in a trend historically right now where the people that are able to get, what that means when I say that statement is that you're an owner of capital, okay? That you have capital and that you're in that part of the game. And so there's a lot of different skill sets that you have to learn to get there. And, it's not something that you want to try to do overnight. It takes time. You got to be patient with yourself. But that's our vision for you guys, right? Is for you guys to play the game and to dominate, right? We were created for a purpose, and part of that purpose was to take dominion. And we don't do that by being the victim throughout our whole lives. And so, the educational part and applying and just being methodical and having a plan and just going step by step by step. And the other part is context is a big thing. Knowing that you don't try to do everything today, right? It goes back to what I was talking about yesterday morning, that if I'm a business startup and I start trying to implement enterprise level, solutions, I'm applying maybe the right strategy, but at the wrong time. And that's where wisdom comes in, is to be able to look at, okay, where am I at? Where am I at in my life? And to apply the right strategy and the right tool at the right time. And so, so this is part of exposing you to that bigger picture and that roadmap. It might be applicable to where you're at today. It might be applicable to where you'll be next year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now. But at some point, it's gonna be the right step. Does that make sense? You know, one of the things when you're talking about, like, you know, financial or business or accounting or legal or whatever, and this is the case for me, in everything that I've had to learn in my life, the hardest part initially is is the case with, like, you know, web development, programming, marketing, it doesn't matter what it is, there's a language. Right? There's a lingo. There's terminology. And for me personally, I've always found that, and this is the same with TWF, True Wealth Formula, is we get into that, some of that language and stuff like that. But I've always found that that's like the first big barrier is to just, and our brain wants to basically go, no, I can't handle that. It's over my head. Right? But what we have to do is we have to basically kind of chill out, take a chill pill, relax a little bit, and let our brain relax and just let it, just allow ourselves to get exposure. Okay? And then once we get familiar with some of that language and that terminology, even though it might be over our head, maybe it doesn't, may not be applicable today, that basically lets, all of a sudden, the dots start to connect. You know, and so I would just encourage you to do that. But, you know, Toby, he's a business owner and investor as well. He's very successful and, he's just, you know, he's a good guy. So please, pay attention. Please help me welcome, my friend and, you know, like I said, asset attorney, legal, you know, estate planning, trust, business tax, the whole deal. This guy's got some incredible, you know, qualifications. And he's a good guy. So please help me welcome Toby Mathis.
Thank you, buddy. Stick around for this. Thank you, hon. Thank you. You guys rock. You guys rock. Hey guys, I operate off of a real simple philosophy, and that is something that a guy named Andrew Carnegie, you guys ever heard of Andrew Carnegie? Yeah, like the Warren Buffett, Bill Gates of the day. He penned a document called The Gospel of Wealth, and I would urge you all to read it. But he said millionaires are trustees of the poor. You don't want to make a whole bunch of money, give it to somebody that may or may not be prepared to handle it, may or may not deserve it. And so the first thing I wanted to do today is something I've never done, and that is invite Chad up here. A lot of times you see, yeah, come on up. You are appreciated. Yeah. Chad runs, works at, humble to the core, King's Ransom. You see Danny up here, you see Hans, sometimes you see me up here, you see people who they say have financial success or have an expertise. Rarely do you get to see the people who actually go out and do the great work tirelessly. And so the first thing I wanted to do is just show my thanks. Because my firm, very successful. We have awesome people that work for us. We have awesome people that work with us. And because of what we do, I get to give back too. So I wanted to give you a little something here. Towards their second 1,000 houses in Nicaragua. Consider that a down payment. And I welcome anybody in here of means to match that today. Anyway, I just wanted to say really thank you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, from everybody at Anderson Business Advisors, we've been really lucky to work with the clients here. Yep. And so you clients, as you make money, I think it shrinks when you try to negotiate it. I give those to the IRS because they're always big checks. One thing real quick. There was a roll of 20s that was left here with a rubber band wrapped around it. I have your rubber band. All right. Dun, dun. All right. I think I'm funny. All right. So we're going to be talking about six things you need to know to build your dynasty. What we don't realize is that there's slavery in the world and oppressors. Millionaires are trustees of the poor. It doesn't mean that they're good. It doesn't mean they're all benevolent. And so think back. I like to always think back, and I blame England on everything. Sorry, Jan. But I like to think of back in the medieval times, you have a king, and he's not a very benevolent king, and he wants to control his peasants. And so what does he do? How do you control the peasants? You keep them illiterate. You can't just tax them. You got to keep them to where they don't know any better. And there was a Bible in that town, and there was a very nice monk who handled the Bible, but he was dependent on the king, and he had a hard decision to make. Do I tick off my benefactor, or do I do what's right? And so the peasants would come to him and say, we really want to learn to read. And the monk would pull out this big book written in Latin, inscriptions all over the place, beautiful pictures in it. And he would say, it's very complicated. I don't think you'll be able to read it. And then the peasants would listen to him and say, yeah, that looks very complicated. I won't be able to do it. I think I'll go back to what I was doing, hoeing some fields, fighting some wars for the king. We did that in this country too. If you don't think that it still occurs in this world, you're blind. An estimated 500 million with an M women in this world are still illiterate. In our country, we oppressed many races. We eradicated some. And some, can you put it up on the screen? Some we would enslave in different ways. This is actually a statute from one of our wonderful states back in the day of slavery. And guess what it said? I took the state out so you don't hate everybody from a particular state. But trust me, they weren't alone. Take a read of it. An act to prevent all persons from teaching slaves to read or write. How do you control a people? You keep them illiterate. Whereas the teaching of slaves to read and write has a tendency to excite dissatisfaction. Duh. In their minds and to produce insurrection. In other words, what do they do when they learn? Rebel. So any person cannot teach, any free person, even white people, you're not allowed to teach the slaves to read. We still do it to this day. We do it with the financial industry. We do it with taxes. We do it with so many things. And so today I'm going to be pulling back a little bit of the mask, and I'm going to go over some of the ways that they're keeping us illiterate, and then I'm going to empower you to do something to change it. Does that sound good? Yeah. All right. Old Ben Franklin said the doorstep to the temple of wisdom is a knowledge of our own ignorance. In other words, we don't know what we don't know. And I'll tell you this, even if you think you're smart, you got a lot of knowledge. Knowledge is knowing that tomato's a fruit. Wisdom's knowing don't cut it up and mix it with the pineapples and the strawberries, right? Because it'll suck. You don't put it in a fruit salad. That's wisdom. And so all I'm going to try to do is incite some wisdom. There's knowledge out there. We all know a lot of things. But I know for certain that we are not teaching in our schools financial literacy. And I have stats to back it up, because I'm an emerald. For you sapphires, the schools are kind of sucking on this. It's a total bummer. For you rubies, they're making it so we can't win. And for your pearls, they're really hurting our children. All right. All right. Scary facts. Sorry, these are all true. 28% of people over 55 have no retirement savings. Oh. Let me tell you something, too. The way they lie to us on this one is they say, on average, Americans have $100,000 in their 401k. Do you know how averages work? You have one guy with $1 million, and you have nine people with nothing. On average, they have $100,000 in their retirement account. So we have nothing to worry about. Don't look over here. Nothing's going on over here. It's very difficult to read. You wouldn't comprehend it. Go back to your job. That's what they do. Just take a look at this. I saw Danny, or heard Danny, talking about millennials, Generation Xers, and boomers and seniors. Just look at that. Where are you on that chart? 42% of millennials have no savings. Gen Xers, not much better. 30. Oof. Boomers. In English, I think old English, you're screwed. All right. The other thing is we go off of something called the median income. If you're a statistician, anybody here do stats? You know the difference between averages and in using a median? The median is we're looking at where's the 50th percentile. Averages get all messed up otherwise. What we care about is where's the 50th percentile. And this is basically the same facts. The 50th percentile has, in the 56 to 61, you're about to retire, $17,000 put aside for retirement. That's the 50th percentile. I'm going to freak you guys out a little bit more. They've enslaved us without us even knowing it. And the way you get enslaved is you become indebted to somebody else or something else. Then they control you, and you did it willingly. But they do trick us. They make it very appealing. Who here thinks you need to have a college education to be successful in the United States? It's a commodity. And if it's a commodity, it can be calculated as to whether or not it's worthwhile. And I'll show you the numbers, because I'm an emerald. Americans have almost $1 trillion in credit card debt. What do you buy with credit card, by the way? Starbucks. I'll give you a pass on the Starbucks. That stuff's pretty flipping good. No, you buy stuff that you consume. You drink it, eat it, wear it. That's a lot of money. $1.3 trillion in student debt. And by the way, if I run up $100,000 on credit cards, traveling the world, drinking, gambling, misbehaving in all sorts of ways, and I live in Las Vegas, guys. I know the ways you can misbehave. You can bankrupt it away. You could say, I'm not going to pay you Visa, MasterCard. But our kids, when they have student debt, you cannot bankrupt away that debt. They are putting the yoke on our generations without us even being aware that they could never take it off. Even if you find out that that degree you are going for, and they tell you, oh, you'll make $50,000, $60,000 a year, they completely lie. Completely lie. Full of credola. Where's Marquet? Do I have Marquet in here? Who here knows Marquet? Marquet, come up just for a second. I have known Marquet for the better part of 20 years. She was actually the roommate of one of our attorneys. I've been practicing for a while, although I look 28. Kind of. Give or take a couple decades. All right, so Marquet, I don't know how to do this. You just have to talk close to me. Can she grab that one? Grab that mic just real quick. Because this is funny. If you guys don't know Marquet's story, I'm going to walk it out of her. You graduated from college. What did you graduate a college degree in?
Public relations.
Public relations. How much were you making when you graduated?
Well, they said I would make $45,000 to $55,000 a year. I made $14,000.
$14,000. So, for those of you guys who love to calculate, that's $7 an hour.
Pretty sweet.
You learned, you self-educated yourself in financial literacy, right?
Yes.
What did you learn to do?
Trade the stock market.
All right. How much did you invest initially?
$2,000.
How much was it worth in 2 years?
$2 million.
There you go. That's it. I like working with Marque. 27 years later, that's what she does. Teaches others how to still trade in the market. Is it a scary place? Is the stock market scary? It can be until you realize that there's some pretty safe places to go inside of it. And I'll show you some stats that'll freak you out. But guess what? It's not where they're telling you to go. It's the opposite of where they're telling you to go, and it's where they go. If you wanted to fix healthcare, make Congress use whatever they enact. Otherwise, do what they do. That's what I want. I want what the rich people do. And I work, just to give you an idea of our firm, we have about 30,000 clients nationwide. I work with some heavy hitters. I work with people making over $100 million a year. I work with lots of people who are making thousands of years. And I look and I watch patterns. 20-some years of watching tax returns, guess what? I know some things about rich people. They have at least three sources of income. They never rely on their income. Let me draw this up for you. I get to use the whiteboard. In accounting, and for those of you who don't know, I'm a tax attorney. I've written several books, Tax-Wise Business Ownership, three different editions of that. I write for NexisLexis, the Washington Practice Manual, Contract Disputes Across State Lines, all that fun stuff. I like taxes and I like numbers, but I'm not going to geek out on you. But you have income. You know what's in that box? What you make with your hard sweat. What I'm working for. Then you have expenses. In the accounting world, then we look at your net worth, and it's a function of two things. Do you guys know what those are? Assets, liabilities. If you are paying your expenses with a liability, you will go bankrupt. I call this the losing loop. It's when your income goes to pay your liabilities go to pay your expenses. You're living off of credit cards. To fix this, it's actually painfully simple. Your income, and who here played Monopoly as a kid? What do you do the first bunch of rolls? Buy a house, right? Because what? What do you get from it? Rent. It makes income. You take your income and you buy assets. And your assets do two things. They pay your expenses and they pay your liabilities. If you understand that simple principle, you will never have to worry about retirement. But you have to buy assets. And they've tricked you into thinking that liabilities are assets. And I'll give you very simple rules to turn that thinking around. So where's Tammy rolling around here? Tammy. Hey, Tammy. Tammy's husband, Henry. Tammy, stand up. Everybody say hi to Tammy. All right. I met Tammy a couple years ago, and I've purchased a lot of houses from Tammy. Tammy finds me houses now. I do that with anybody. But I was sitting in Tammy's home. She was kind enough to let me stay there. And I was talking to her husband, who worked for R.J. Reynolds for 30-some years, 37. And so Henry was like, yeah, my 401k kind of took a torpedo. I was going to retire. I was going to, you know, be very comfortable. And then the stock market did what? It crashed. I had a buddy, and he'd always buy rental houses. He didn't really do the 401k. He ended up with 12 rental properties. He retired. He's doing really good. And it was the way he said it, and he was like, yeah, it kind of sucked what they made me do. Thank you. I just wanted everybody to see you. She's beautiful, awesome. Yeah. And I bought. And she'll find you a cash flow house if you need it. Oh, I hate these facts. Look at the debt on our mortgage. 14.6, can't even say it, trillion. The U.S. GDP is just under 19 trillion. In other words, when we add those two things up, we're almost at a year's worth of taking everything we have and paying it nothing towards debt. Isn't that sick? Your debt is somebody else's asset, by the way. You give the bank your money, what do they give you back? 1% if you're lucky. How much do they charge you to use your own money? Crap. That one should hit a couple of you guys like a 2x4 in the back of the head. Yeah, they turn around, they loan you out your money. 33% of U.S. adults passed a basic literacy test. There was 150,000 people questioned. Four questions like, do you understand compound interest? Can you calculate what 20% on of a $100,000 loan will be in a year? They couldn't pass it. What does that tell you? They're keeping us functionally, financially illiterate. We're going to kick that thing in the butt. Social Security will need to be cut at least 23% by the year 2033. Anybody think that Social Security is going to be there right now? A lot of folks are relying on it. It's going to be a painful reminder, and it's not that much. I think the average payout is about $1,300 a month. We need assets that give us monthly cash flow. I don't even look at net worth the same way as most people do. Anybody else think of it as a number? I think of it as a number of days. I look at it as the number of days I can live without working. If I'm burning my nest egg, then it's a finite amount of money. If my assets are providing me enough money to live, I have an infinite amount of days I can live off of that asset. Where's Isaiah? Stand up. Isaiah Holden, young man. How old are you? 22. Do you have assets that are coming in and giving you money on a monthly basis? What do you have?
I have 4 mobile homes.
4 mobile homes?
And then 3 apartments. One of them's still in the process of being renovated.
Yeah. All right. Could you live off of that money?
If I had to, I could make it happen.
So he could live off of the assets. How old are you again?
22.
Sorry, old guys. He just kicked your ass. A, your dad's got to be proud. B, your dad said something to me. He was a preacher, right? Minister? He said something. He was in he was with me in New Orleans. We were talking about investing. And he said, you can't fill somebody's glass from an empty pitcher.
Nice.
Millionaires are trustees of the poor. You have to take what you know and put it to use. It's like Hans was talking about with the talents. If you bury it, you'll be punished. You got to put it to use, and you got to use what God gave you, and then take care of those who aren't as good at it as you. That doesn't mean you hoard it. That doesn't mean you give it all to your kids, because we don't know what that money will do to the kids. And I do estate planning for a living. I see what happens when parents leave their money to their kids. It will break them. You're better off using it for public works, or better yet, create your own public works entity like King's Ransom, and give that to them instead. Let them control that. They can't take all the money, but they can get a living. The other scary fact here, which we all have to deal with, is that there's about a $245,000 bill that we're all going to have to pay when we retire, and that's in the medical expenses that are not covered. It's a pretty big amount. When we talk about the insurance industry, you'll get pissed again. But let's just go back to our college grads, because how many of you guys have kids in college? How many of you are a kid in college? A few. Good job being here. Wish I had been here. I had a great mentor, but it took me a little while making stupid decisions before I caught on. The average benefit, and this is just, again, average. We know about averages, right? The average benefit of having a college degree in the United States is estimated to be just about $1 million over a lifetime, a working lifetime. If I took $10,000 a year and invested it at 7%, I will have just over $1 million. It's $1,000,092 at the end of 30 years. Do you think that those things, that there's a coincidence that these things are getting kind of close to each other? So the benefit is about $10,000 a year. So what does that mean? You better be making at least $10,000 more than a high school graduate, right? To break even. Oh, but they don't do that to you. They estimate, and these numbers should all make sense now, if you spend $30,000 on college education, that's like taking $325,000 out of retirement. Because that money is no longer used. Does that make sense? Does that change the way you look at degrees? It's a commodity. They're selling you a commodity. Here's this English degree from super expensive private school. Then we have to look and say, what is it worth? Oh, the average starting wage for a Bachelor of Arts is, in this country, $29,000. How much did you pay for that degree? At least $100,000. Dope. The average starting wage for a Bachelor of Science is $41,000. And I can tell you, in mid-career, they're going to be about 72, 74. The average wage in the United States right now is between 70 and 75. And you can go look up all the stats with the Department of Labor. They collect all this stuff. What does that tell you? It tells me two things. Law of averages. They're hosing those poor Bachelor of Arts kids because they're subsidizing the guys that are actually going to make the money. Because they don't say, hey, your English degree is going to be this much, but if you're going for this degree, it's going to be this. You get to pay tuition. Mom and Dad, this is where you sit your kid down. And you say, hey, wait a second. I don't know if I want to go and pay the private school. Maybe we'll go public school or a land-grant college. In-state tuition. It's quite literally, they go $44,000 a year for a private institution on average per year, which equals about $200,000 over a degree if they manage to graduate in 4 years. Drop it $10,000 for a Bachelor of Science, or excuse me, for a out-of-state tuition for a public, and another $10,000 to about $25,000 for in-state tuition. So that means that's about $100,000 if you go to in-state school, if you graduate. And by the way, what's the graduation rate in the United States? Does anybody know for college? It's about 55%. Of that 55%, 2 will be unemployed. So out of 100 people, 55 will graduate, 2 will be unemployed, 18 will be underemployed, meaning they got a degree, but they didn't use it. They couldn't get a job in their field. Now we're wondering why we have such bad debt issues with our kids, and we make fun of the millennials all the time, right? You want everything handed to you. They got handed a lot of debt that they cannot get rid of. So here's the three rules of financial planning. Write these down and remember them. They're a little bit difficult, so follow me. Number one, calculate. Number two, calculate. And the last one is the hardest, calculate. Everything you do, get a pencil out. And I don't care how complicated they say it is. Go try to find out the data and say, what am I paying for? What am I going to get? I said to my daughter, who's a senior in college, and just to give you guys a background on me, when I started my career as an attorney, I didn't like lawyers. I never worked for a firm. I went to law school because I hated lawyers. I worked in a business where my mentor was like, let's all go to law school because the lawyers suck. They keep telling us everything we can't do and nothing that we can. I did liquidation, international liquidation, so you always get into international weird issues. I'm always like, why don't you just give money to the crossing guards? They let everything through. You can't do that. It's bad. I always say, like, well, what's the penalty? Well, there really isn't one. Don't speed. If you go 56 and 55, you'll be arrested. No, you won't. Whatever. Yeah, so we all went to law school. I lived in a box when I got out, 400 square feet, and I was poor. Actually, for some of you guys, you'll recognize this word. I was po'. My dad's from Mobile, and my parents met in Montgomery, so they would say, Toby, you're po'. Yeah, I'm po'. I'd go to Kentucky Fried Chicken to lick other people's fingers. All right. 3 years of suffering from that, and I did my own thing. It's not that bad. If they're eating the spicy stuff, it's actually like, give me that thumb. Like, ah. Wuss. I'm cleaning your fingers for free. You weren't going to do anything with it. It's going to go to waste. Starving kids. No. All right. Anyway, 3 years later, I'll go back to this. 3 years later, it was kind of funny. I had my first month where I made $1 million. Yeah, put that in perspective. First month. Never looked back. That was in 1999, April of 1999. Still remember it. But I suffered. My daughter always says, well, didn't you just get a credit card? And I was like, look, there was qualifications back then. You had to have a pulse or something because apparently I was dead because they wouldn't give me diddly squat. And I begged. Can I have a dollar? No. Thank God they didn't give me the money. Because I worked my way. I figured out ways to get it. I traded people. Hey, I'll review that contract, but you got to give me a chair. I would trade with anybody. I did liquidation anyway. I knew all the warehouse guys. Come on, what do you got in there? Drop something. Break it, ding it. I'll get you out of that little D-wee. You're drinking the other night, you hit something, I'll get you out of that. You just bring, drop a pallet of something. Come on. I'm not proud to admit it. We make our ways. Anyway, so I kept on my feet. But one thing I never forgot, and it was something that Jerry told me, again, my mentor, is he said that, hey, there's rules to the universe. And one of the things is, Toby, there are set rules, and you need to take yourself out of the equation. You do right by other people, you'll be rewarded. So if you go look at the Bible, most important rule, they were trying to trick, it was a lawyer trying to trick Jesus, and they said, what's the most important rule? We have 650 some odd rules here. What is the most important? They're trying to trick him, right? What did he say? Yep. Love your God. All right, God, I love you. Number two, love your neighbor. Love your neighbor. He said, all the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. What did he not say? Take care of yourself. Screw the rest of them. You ever heard of divide and conquer? Do you not see what they're doing to us? We're fighting. Stock market, there must be winners and losers, right? That's not true. They're making us losers because they have us pitted against each other. And the same thing is if you learn to read, what's your duty? Teach others to read. I call that financial stewardship. You got to learn to become financially literate so you can share it with other people so they don't get taken advantage of. If you do that, you will be rewarded. I'm living proof. Why is this important? I can sum it up in a picture. That doesn't happen. You're not taking it with you. Sorry, guys. You're not. It's not yours. You are managing it during your lifetime. You're entrusted based off of your abilities. I don't know his plan. Some people are given more than others. But I can tell you the people that are not faithful with it have it taken away over and over again. And I can sum it up in this point. If I gave you $1,000 and said, please take care of this child with it, save it for them, what would you do with it? Would you go gamble with it? Would you go buy an Xbox with it? How would you treat it? You get your $1,000, what do you do with it? Why are you treating it differently? You need to be very deliberate. If we know that $30,000 is $300,000, then the easiest thing to do is say $1,000 is $10,000. $1,000 that I spend now is $10,000 out of my retirement. You want to go buy a watch? Nice Romex? Rolex. I want to spend some dough, and you're like, hey, I'm going to splurge on a $5,000. That's $50,000 in retirement. That's the way to look at it. All right, so here's the six things you need to know to build a dynasty. Number one, you're being ripped off in the stock market by people and companies we think we can trust. And I can prove it. It's kind of fun actually proving it. The way I'm going to describe this is my friend Luigi. Some of you guys have met Luigi. You guys remember Luigi? I introduced him to you a couple years ago. For the new guys, what is Luigi? He's a butcher. Now, if I go to Luigi and say, what should I have for dinner this week, what is Luigi going to tell me? Yeah, I got some veal, I got some New York steaks. What is Luigi not going to tell you? He's not going to tell you to eat fish. He's not going to tell you to eat vegetables. Why is that? Luigi's a butcher. Then we have this nice lady. She's a nutritionist. And you go to her and you say, what should I have for dinner? What is she going to tell you? Lots of vegetables, none of that GMO stuff, right? Have a little bit of red meat. Tom. A lot of chicken. Some leafy stuff. I'm just kidding you. Tom's huge. He's going to come over here and just body slam me. Here, the reason being is because the nutritionist is what's called a fiduciary. Whose interest is she putting before her own? Yours. The butcher, whose interest is he putting before your own? His. In the stock market, brokers are butchers. 90% of the people you talk to in investments are butchers, and they're selling you red meat that will kill you and destroy your retirement. And I'm sorry if I'm offending people in the financial industry, but it's, you guys know, in your heart of hearts, you know exactly what's going on. They're transferring the wealth from us into their pockets. We don't need them. They're just telling us it's too difficult for you to read. You wouldn't understand derivatives. Oh, I understand that my money disappeared. Bernie Madoff did this for 40 years. You wouldn't understand my strategies. SEC investigated him twice. You wouldn't understand. Ripped off people for billions, like $60 billion. Oh, you wouldn't understand, therefore I'm not going to provide it to you. That's a sure sign of a ripoff. You don't think it's true? Last year, they imposed what's called a fiduciary standard on 401ks. Very recent, and they said you have to put the client's interest first. So there's this wonderful Patterson versus Morgan Stanley. You go read the case. This is actually kind of funny. Who do you think Rob Patterson is? Some bereaved customer? He's an employee of Morgan Stanley. He's the managing director for New York City. And he's the head of a class action of thousands of Morgan Stanley employees suing Morgan Stanley for what? Can you guys read that? Morgan Stanley, this is from the complaint. Morgan Stanley selected their proprietary funds not based on the merits of the investments or because doing so was in the best interest of the plan participant, but because the products provided significant revenue and profits to Morgan Stanley. What do they sell you? Do they say, oh, don't use our product, we've got some others over here? Literally in the complaint, what they said is there's plenty of other lower cost alternatives. Anybody here have anything with Morgan Stanley? You're like, oh. It's not just them. It's the entire mutual fund industry. Forbes did a wonderful study. In the mutual fund industry, they only have to show the expense ratio. They show it's right around 1%, and everybody thinks that's the cost of a mutual fund. That is not the cost of a mutual fund. You have to add on transaction costs. You have to add on the commissions. They have something called soft dollars, which means, hey, I need research from you, so how about you charge me extra on the trades I do in this fund, and you don't charge me for the research? So who's paying for the research? And then they add on a management fee. On average, 5.82%. Now, I've asked people in here, calculate their 401ks. Calculate what they're actually returning. Who here has done that before? Anybody? For you guys? What was the return?
2%.
2%. The market went up 7%. They told you you made 10%, and you made 2%. So what are they charging you? 8%. You guys know how much money that is? I'll show you how much money it is, but you might vomit. So I'm going to give you guys an air sick bag. No, I'm not. Just teasing. You know, we've had a lot of people go through this, and it's usually right around 2%. I know, here's real life, my mom. I'm my mom's son. Will she listen to her son? No. I have Duncan. He manages my affairs. He's such a good man. He puts me in the best mutual funds. How much did you give him this year, Mom? $25,000. How much is your account worth? $23,000. How much did you make? Duncan said I made 7%. Let's walk through this, Mom. You gave him 25 and it's worth 23. Did you make money? Yes. I got the smarts from my dad. Mom, 23 is less than 25. I know, but Duncan's such a nice guy. He said I made 7%. Some things you just can't win, and just walk away from it, right? All right, so let's do some math. This is fun. Your emeralds will be all excited. Your sapphires stare at the ceiling. All right, assume $10,000 invested, and I'll make it in sapphire language. Let's say you took $10,000 a year and you had a little bit less fun. You had a 7% growth rate on it, which is the average. The S&P over like forever. And you invested it for 30 years. Guess what that is? Here we go. We'll start calculating. If you have 7% investment earnings, and I'll put a little highlighter on that. 7% right there. Whee! See that? And your fees, let's just say your management fees were a little bit less than the average, 4.8. How much do they get of your money over your lifetime? I'll give you a hint. Here's what you would have made. It's about $1 million, as I said earlier. $1,020,000. Here's what you would have, $415,000. Holy crap, how much did they get? You lost $605,000 to Wall Street. Oh, question, who is at risk for all that money? You. So that thing grew. What did it grow? Credola, 100-some-odd thousand. That sucks. It's the difference of 415,000 versus 1 million. Who just took all your profit? Wall Street. Why do we have no money in our retirements? Wall Street. They trick us. It's too complicated. 401k is too complicated. We have five funds. You can do this, that, and the other. They are ripping us off blind. And I don't say that with any guilt whatsoever, because I know a few of you guys are going to write me the "you're an asshole" email. I always get it. I actually had a guy with the Primerica, super nice guy, you know, honest guy, and I said, could you please tell me how much they charge for the mutual fund? Please do it. And he could not find it. He went to his superiors, could not find it. The reason being is because you can't calculate it because it's not in any public documents. So please invest in something that we have no idea what it's going to cost you, because it depends on how many people are in that line that have to get paid. What I can do is reverse engineer stuff. And I'll show you an account that I did that for. Here's, what if you had a 2% management fee? You ever have anybody say, oh, it's just 2%? Oh, it's not that big, it's 2%? All right, let's take a look at that. How much do they get in fees? Can you guys see? This is going to be fun. So you invest $10,000. 7% annually, 2% management fees, fund at balance after 30 years, $688,000. How much did it cost you in fees, that little 2%? $332,000. They made half your balance. How much did they invest? Nothing. In fact, you pay the whole freight. Are you guys getting me? Can we cut out the fees? Absolutely. Marquez living proof. Where's Mike Alameda? Where's he at? Where is he? Mike. Marquez was telling me something. How much have you invested this year in the stock? Or don't tell me how much you did. How much is your return this year just doing conservative investments? 30%. And he's doing something that you almost, like, it's really tough to lose at if you follow the rules. But nobody wants to do it because it's boring and the brokers don't make much money. Frankly, you can just cut them out. Did you pay a broker? No. How much did it cost you to buy shares? $2. Here's an easier one. How much do the firms make off of your money over the lifetime? They know this to the T. You have a $500,000 account. This is how much you'll be paying them. Just to give you an idea, this is little Merrill Lynch. Hi, Merrill. 900-some thousand. They made more than you did. But it's worth it. Here's another one. $400,000 account. The fees were $17,000. I'll blow it up for you. Right there. $17,000. $400,000. That's 4.29%. We dissected one of your guys', somebody in here, we dissected your account. If you just eliminated the person who is pretending to manage your account, and by the way, these guys aren't geniuses, a monkey beat them 2 years in a row. 20% of the mutual funds outperform the index. You can do the S&P index. And by the way, if you go into the ultra safe realm, which is Dividend Kings, that's the difference between, pop that up, the Dividend Kings are stocks that have had increasing dividends, get this, for 50 years in a row. Do you guys know what a dividend is? Yeah. It's when the company pays out a portion of its profit to you. So you're getting paid every year. Does Amazon pay a dividend? Apple? They hoard their cash and then they say, look, my stock's worth so much more. I can't spend that. And if I do, I have to pay tax. I'd rather just get money out all the time. That's called cash flow. And look at the difference. That's the S&P index. This little number right here is the market, which only 20% of the mutual funds beat. Here's Dividend Kings. If all you did is said, hey, I'm just going to buy Dividend Kings, you would have made almost three times as much since 1990. Freaky. What's the solution to this? What do you guys think it is? A little bit of financial literacy. A little bit of financial literacy. Number two, insurance companies know their numbers, so should you. This is going to be upsetting to some of you guys. I look at the chances of use. What does an insurance company always sell? Term. Buy term and invest the rest. That's because they have a 2% chance of ever paying it out and only a 1% chance that it'll ever come to you. How about a car? You have about a 5% chance of using it. Home, 5.3%. Health, 6%. Now here's the freaky one. Permanent insurance, whole life, IULs, 20%. And the reason that it's not 100 is because people sometimes convert them into something else or roll them into other accounts because they're cash favored accounts. Do they tell you about that? No. And then the big one for me is long-term care. This saved my butt in my dad's situation. He had sundowners. 8 years, which is Alzheimer's, except he'd go violent. So he couldn't live at home. The thing you don't realize is you have to house him, and you still have to have the house for mom. We had long-term care. It covered it. Had to prompt them with a little bit of lawyer letters, but they did it. Here's a freaky one. Alex Ramos, where are you? Alex, stand up just for a second. Your family's been doing residential assisted living, right? How much do they generate off of, on an average month, per room in your house?
$10,000 per bed.
$10,000 per bed. Who pays it?
Long-term
health care. Do you want to go live in a big box, or do you guys want to live in a really cool house in Hawaii? You can decide what your future is going to look like. Do I want to live in a facility where I have my family around me, people can come in, or do I want to die with a caregiver sitting there over my bed saying, hey, we need a couple spots. We got 200 and we're a little overbooked. You can choose, but it's going to require those. The sad thing is long-term and whole life can be combined into one. But they won't tell you that. They'll do this term and invest the rest. I hear that from so many gurus. And of course, they're getting something on the back end. The solution, get quotes, calculate everything, follow the three rules, and you'll be good. Talk to people that you can trust. I always say talk to a fiduciary. Here's how you find out whether somebody's a fiduciary. You ready? It's hard. Are you a fiduciary? It's a Series 65 or they're a CFP. Are you a fiduciary? If the answer is, well, kind of, no. It's a yes or no. It's like, are you pregnant? Well, I mean, on Tuesdays. It's a yes or no. We've been taught the die and distribute model. It destroys wealth and relationships. It absolutely does. Who picked this thing up? Who pushes the die and distribute? When I say estate planning, what do you immediately think of? A will. Hey, I got to graft a will. No, you don't, because a will guarantees you're going to court. And guess what happens in court? Nothing good. I've never known anybody who went to court and said, that was awesome. AARP said 90% of probates involve 60 years or older, and probate is the court process. They make $1.5 billion in attorney's fees. This is back in 1990. They got hammered by the Bar Association for this, by the way. It's estimated that it takes 20% of small estates. If you have an estate worth $200,000, how much do the attorneys take? 40. In California, anybody here from California? You have statutory rates. The attorneys get a statutory amount. They get to take, I think it's 8%. Right off the top. Gross asset. Scales down over time. They get a nice piece, not of what your equity is, but of what the value is. Why don't they tell us this? Yeah, it says it's a marketing trap. It's a loss leader. And AARP said you should disclose the cost of probate before you stick somebody in a will. Because you can avoid it. The solution is real simple. You could put a living trust in place one time, and it's done. Don't have to go to probate. Anybody tell you that? I'll tell you that over and over and over again if you listen to me. Hey, you need a living trust. Don't go. But besides, a living trust can go on forever. When you're doing a planning, don't do the 50-year plan. Do the 200, 300-year plan. Don't distribute your assets to your kid. You can make your assets available to them if they need it. Great example, autistic kid in Pennsylvania. Grandparents thought they were doing them a huge favor, and they left their estate to the autistic child. The state of Pennsylvania had been paying for 18 years to help that child. What did the state of Pennsylvania do when he got the inheritance? They took it. Trust would have avoided it. All right, so you have two plans, yours or the government. Which one do you want? Because you are making it no matter what. If you don't have somebody picked to advocate for you in healthcare, your doctor will make a decision. If you don't have anybody listed to take care of your financials, guess what? You'll have a guardian appointed. And they'll take care of your finances. And guardians like to sell everything. And when you sell things at an estate plan, do you get 100%? Or at an estate sale, do you get 100% of what it's worth? No, you get a fraction. And it takes decades to recover. And you do that every generation, every 30, 40 years. Can you see how your family is never going to get rich? Yep, you take it away, you don't sell it. Solution is just get a living trust. Do things calculated. For Danny folks, I did for these guys, single trust is $1,500. Joint trust, $1,750. If you're a financial steward, which I'll talk about. There are two tax systems in the U.S. One is easy and costly, and the other one takes a little bit of effort. The way I explain this is, if anybody's here ever been to Disney World, you drive in, and there are lots of signs that'll take you. Like, you go into the airport, Orlando Airport, and you're driving to Disney World, are there signs that'll take you there? What do you got to do every 5 minutes? You got to stop and pay a toll. Sand Lake Road runs parallel to that, and there are no tolls. What's the difference between that? You just don't know. Now you have Google, and you can, like, say, avoid tolls, and it'll tell you which road to do. The American tax system is no different. What you have to understand is that there's three types of tax relief. Realistically, we can defer. We can put it in IRAs. We can put it in 401ks. We can pay our tax later. Number two is the deduction. I just never pay it, and I know a ton. It's over 100 in my book. There's all sorts of cool things that you may not realize. You can write off 100% of your health care, including your co-pays and your deductibles. There are ways to do it. I can get you money for your house that you don't have to report on your income. I can get you about $10,000 a year on average. There are so many cool little things. I can cut your, if just for kicks, when you go home tonight and you look at your 1040, if you have a small business, look at line 57. If it's more than $5,000, I can cut that puppy to about a third. If it's $10,000, $15,000, I can cut it to about a third. Not that hard. It's called an S-corp. The other one is divide. Split income between different taxpayers and vehicles. We're all used to doing that with an IRA, but are we used to doing that with our kids? You're working in a business. They have a better tax bracket than you. If they're going to college, I'll just tell you from personal experience, I don't pay my daughter's tuition. Who does? She does. She works for one of my businesses. She makes her money. Guess what her tax rate is? Zero. I also jam money into an IRA and a Roth IRA every year for her. What is that going to be worth when she retires? A flipping lot. We have been lied to about assets and liabilities and often are tricked into buying liabilities because we don't know the difference. You guys know what an asset is? An asset feeds you. A liability bleeds you. It's real simple. Assets put money in your account every month. Liabilities take money out every month. What's the biggest asset that we're told that we have as Americans? Your house. What does it do? It takes money out. We actually get mortgages to buy liabilities. Do you see why we're in such bad shape? I moved to Las Vegas in 2007, right before the market crashed. You know what I did? I looked at the houses and said, they're really expensive. I don't think I want to buy that. I will take the down payment on a house and I will buy some crappy rentals. They're like gold. And they give me $1,000 to $1,100 cash flow every month. So every month I have about $3,300 coming in off of these things. And I use that and said, hey, I'll go rent a house. There's so many empty houses in Vegas. I can get a palace. Let somebody else pay for that liability. And guess what I paid for my rent? Zero. Because I had assets paying the expense. I know you probably haven't heard that before. You got to look at all assets and say, are they bringing money in or are they costing me? Gold, silver, I know people like to have it. Is it an asset? Does it cost you to have it? It's a boom or bust. It's not going to feed my family. I believe in hedges, but don't buy it thinking it's like an investment that you're going to sit there and kill it. I've seen many people get hurt because it's like this. Even if I buy Butch, where's Butch? Even if I buy a stock and it goes, I still have, if I buy a Dividend King or if I buy a dividend paying stock, guess what I have every quarter coming in? Cash flow, money. It'll eventually, over time, it will pay for itself. And I never have to worry about it again. We all have the ability to control our destiny and create a dynasty. And a dynasty is nothing more than a family that lasts a long period of time. If you want to be rich, do what the rich do. We're in this presidential election. What do we keep hearing about? The Clinton Foundation, the Trump Foundation. You want to know why? Because they're not covered by the SEC and nobody owns them. They're controlled by families. Rockefeller, Carnegie, every single one of them. The Hershey Trust. 1905 was created. It owns 2/3 of the Hershey publicly traded company, dumps billions of dollars into that thing. Milton Hershey had no kids. But it educates 2,000 orphans in their school every year. It runs a cemetery. It runs a hospital, a museum. And it brings in billions of dollars. Guess what they pay in tax? Do what the rich do. I will take you down that path if you want to. You got to have a strategy. Real quick, does one size fit all? No, one size does not fit all. And by the way, see if you can find Hans. All right, pass out the brochures, guys. Can you pass out the brochures? I know I'm evil. All right, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to go through the items that we're going to give you guys. And this is going to be ridiculously low price. The reason being is because I want everybody in this room to join us. And I'll just give you guys an idea of the price. First off, the price is going to be $97 for 1 hour. For 1 hour. After an hour, you get to pay full boat. But let me explain what you're going to get. You're going to get the 7 rules of financial stewardship. We go through what we call 5 steps to making your financial vision a reality. We've done this plenty of times. What did you guys pay last time when we did this? We blended it in, but it was a couple grand. The other thing we do is in my firm, I don't like hourlies. I have a platinum service. It's $2,500 to sign up for. And then you pay $35 a month and you have access to our attorneys and our accountants. You can ask questions and guess what the bill is? Zero. It's the $35. I know plenty of guys who use it. Elena, how often do I meet with you just to go over stuff? Once a month? How much would you be paying for a lawyer if you met with them once a month? For an hour? Sometimes two. Yeah, a lot. It gets hefty. The other thing we're going to do is we're going to have an introduction, a one-day webcast called the Financial Literacy Workshop. We're going to talk about financial stewardship. We're going to teach you how you can help other people. how you can help other people, and what habits actually keep us poor. Once you guys get some light shined on this stuff, you'll immediately see it and you'll quit doing it. There's plenty of folks who now have, like, last dynasty, what was the goal, guys? Buy a rental property, right? Get a rental property. How many of you guys have purchased a rental property since that last dynasty? Start looking around. A lot of you guys. Let me put it in mathematical terms. If I went and bought a perpetual bond, you can only do that in the UK, for $300 a month forever, it would cost me about $300,000. In the United States, we can do that for about $30,000. Where's Aaron Hudson? Aaron. Aaron, just stand up real quick. Aaron, I met you a couple years ago at a dynasty, right? How many houses have you wholesaled to other people in that time? Over 160. Yeah. Are these cash flow properties? Yes. So here's the little principle. Who was she helping? Other people. She was bringing the deals to other people, finding properties that would, the cap rate on those, the average cap rate? What is it?
13.
13% investment, you get depreciation and appreciation. You get all these good things, but it just keeps paying. Great job, by the way. That's somebody who takes it and runs. If you want to know how to do it, that's somebody you'd talk to. During the five steps to making your financial dreams a reality, something else we're going to go over is real estate. If you have no money, you can still bird dog for other people and make money that way. And then you can flip houses so that you can buy long-term rentals. But make no bones about it. Our goal is to have assets that give you perpetual income. I call it infinity investing. It never goes away. If I buy the right dividend stock, and by the way, if I just bought the Dividend Kings, do you guys see the returns? Do you know how much? During the crash, the market crash, we lost 38%. The Dividend Kings fluctuated 14%. A lot less ulcers. And all that while, guess what it was doing? Kicking you dividends. On average, somewhere in the 3 and 4%. Did I do something bad? Okay, you got it. So this is it, guys. I'm going to make this real clear. I want you guys to attend this. It's $97. I was going to do the $19.95, and then I said, God, that kind of stinkolas. And then I was $4.97. In fact, on all the flyers, it says $4.97. But then I said, you know what? You guys are going to buy First Steps to Success again. So I just took it off it. My math is a dollar off, but $97. All right? So get it done. We're going to take a 10-minute break. Please go back. Get registered. I'd love to have you guys on that next class.
You can stay right where you're at. You're not being rude. You guys are awesome. Okay. All right. Oh, yes. This is so perfect. No, I'm next. Sorry, I'm now. Okay. Oh, I know you can go another hour if I want. Because you're amazing like that. How did Toby do? Okay, cool. I just don't want to knock a Coke on it. Is that Red Bull?
No.
Oh, my gosh. I know what Red Bull smells like. Ed Bull. Okay, it's Ed Bull. It's not Red Bull, he says. All right, cool. All right, I want to show you. Oh, wow. How are we going to do this? You're in? So is that $10,000, $20,000, $30,000? Beachy's in for 10, so that's $30,000.
1K. All I got is 1K right now.
1,000?
Yeah.
So that's $31,000. Toby, your $10,000 was matched. 30 G's, like that. We got another 1,000, that's 32,000. That's amazing. You guys are crazy. Sorry, honey. That's awesome. So $32,000 matched. I love it. Okay, here's what we're going to do now. All of you guys that are in line, I need you to listen. I don't want you to miss this. And then we've got one last exercise that we're going to do. What I want you to do is I want you to, first of all, we're about to leave this, right? We're a couple hours away from this entire thing being done. And I have thoroughly enjoyed my time with you. This next segment that we're going to do, and then Hans is actually going to come back on the stage here in about 30 minutes and share with you something that is so very powerful that actually has saved some of our clients' lives. And then we have one last little 30-minute segment, and then we're sailing to the pool. And it's going to stop raining. Because there's some business that needs to be taken care of in a pool. Okay, there's four different seasons of life, okay? And every farmer knows what the seasons are, okay? Every farmer knows this. And I want you to think like a farmer. So the first season is a season where nothing is happening, okay? Nothing is happening. This is when you are dreaming for the harvest, you're hoping for the harvest, and you're working, but nothing's happening. How many of you have ever been in that season before? Okay, we all have gone through that season, okay? The key is to not be emotionally tormented in that season, but to recognize this is the winter season and nothing grows, okay? But this is not the time to worry and fret about harvest time, but it's time to just recognize, okay, I'm in a winter season right now, okay? So that's actually the time of preparation, all right? And that preparation time, Mona, where's my blue binder? My blue binder's right here. I got it. Never mind. Oh my goodness, that thing is heavy. And this is not even all of it. Okay, so the preparation, during the preparation season, that's when everything is dead, okay? Everything's dead. You're hoping for something great. You're preparing for something great. Nothing's happening. This is even that time of, you know, I don't know, this is that time sometimes where we can deal with discouragement. And how many have ever been discouraged before? We all have, right? But even discouragement is temporary. Do you understand? It's only temporary. So number two, the second is the planting season. And the again, the preparation, we did a lot of preparation this weekend, did we not? Remember removing the rocks, getting rid of old mindsets, the thorns and the thistles that are in our head? You got confronted with a lot of things that are keeping you back. How many of you pushed through a bunch of those things this weekend? How many of you expanded your territory this weekend? How many of you had some things that you didn't think you could do that now you're like, maybe I can, okay? And how many of you went from the maybe I can to I'm done deal? Okay, do you understand? That's expanding your mental territory. That's expanding the territory, even in your soul, that you're expanding it. It's important for us to gather together to do those things because iron sharpens iron. And that's what we've been walking through this weekend. So if you don't prepare, then you will not effectively plant. So the planting season is when the actual work is getting done. I'm talking about you're physically planting stuff in the ground. So what does that look like? It's like that investing time, right? Where you start doing this investing thing. I know that when you sat through, some of you, not everybody, some of you have much more higher financial literacy than I do. My husband has far more than I do. Do you understand? So how many of you, some of what Toby was showing was going, just sailing, boo. And you started a daydream, okay? Guess what? The very first time I listened to stuff like that, same thing happened to me. Now I'm starting to understand some of the terms. Why? Because my mind is now starting to grow. Why? Because those seeds were planted, and now it's like, okay, I'm starting to get that. I'm starting to understand that. So the more that you spend time learning these kinds of things, now it's like, oh, okay, I get it, and everything begins to get relevant for you. So there's the planting season. Do you see anything during the planting season? Nope. The ground looks exactly the same as it did before, right? So while you're planting, you still see nothing. Lots of hard work, but you see absolutely nothing. The third part is the season of protection. Okay? The season of protection is when now you have, and Chad, go ahead and put it on the screen. Now you have this tiny little weak, suck, vulnerable sprout. Why do I say weak, suck? Biscanetti asked you 2 days ago if you've ever grown anything from the ground, right? How many of you have, right? When you've seen that, okay, now how many of you have had that thing sprout up and it was a super hot day and that sucker withered and died? Right? How many of you have ever experienced where, let's say it wasn't a really hot day, but those May rains, especially in Texas, Hawaii, you know, when it rains in the tropics or it rains here in Texas, it's like, forget about it, man. It's not raining. It's buckets. How many of you have ever had your little sprout completely overcome by too much water? So this is why it's a seed. When the sprout comes up, this is the time to protect that sprout. You can't always, but what I'm about to show you is where you can, where you can. So that's the time. When you see that little tiny sprout, it's time to protect. Number four is production. The season of production. That's when that thing really only after a couple of weeks starts to grow really, really fast. Then a couple of weeks after that, we're starting to see a plant. A few weeks after that, what do we see? Fruit, right? That's what you see. If you're growing squash or corn or whatever, man, it is amazing how we go from nothing to what? A whole bunch of something, right? So when there's a whole bunch of something, it makes up for the time when we saw nothing, right? So I want you to think like a farmer. And this is something that I did a really long time ago. My mind was so polluted and so toxic and so lost for so long that I was one of those people that on a daily basis, I had to direct my mind. Because if I allowed my mind to run on its own, where would my mind take me? Where did it take me? Back to my failures. My mind would take me back to my pain. It would take me to the trauma of my childhood. It would take me to my financial failures and everyone I couldn't trust. So it would automatically give me the harvest of my past, or at least a view of it, and I wouldn't be able to see that which was right in front of me. I wasn't able to see that there was actually improvement in front of me. So imagine if a farmer buys a plot of land. He buys the best possible non-GMO organic heirloom seed. What I buy. Okay. He has the best possible equipment. He may even hire a few other people to help him. He plants out this entire field. He comes back at a certain period of time. He looks out to the field and he sees that tiny little sprout. He looks at it because he's a first timer. He's a first time farmer, right? He invested the money into equipment, the money into the seed. He invested because he learned on the DIY, you know, YouTube channel. Okay. So he saw the videos and he's like, okay. And he does these things. He does all the preparation. He plants the seed. He comes back. He looks at his field. It's all this black dirt and these little weak, sucked, vulnerable sprouts. He looks at that field and he's like, really? After all of that work and all the excuses of all the people who didn't show up on time or didn't do it right, after all the expense of the equipment, the expense of this land, the expense of this business, and this is all I got. These little weak suck sprouts. He starts stomping on the sprouts. He freaking abandons the field. How many of you know that would never happen in farming? But how many of you have done that in your life? You're like, I did what? You started off on a journey when you came to First Steps to Success. You learned some new skills of prospecting, presenting, closing. You learned some new financial strategies. You learned some more on debt strategies. You learned some communication skills. You learned some skills in motivating people, managing people. You learned how to fix some of the relationships at home and at work. But Danny, my husband is still a jerk. But Danny, I haven't lost all my weight yet. I'm not a size 6 yet. I can do F-O-R, but not M. I'm still not making $100,000 a year yet. My closing ratio is only 10%. I've only paid off $5,000 worth of debt. I'm still not debt free. I still haven't gotten a raise. I still am not managing my time correctly. Who has stomped on your sprouts? You're supposed to protect them, not kill them. You're supposed to feed them. What you focus on is what you get good at. Okay, look, some of you had a goal to bring 100 people to First Step Success last year, for the entire year. You didn't do it. You saw Andres up here, he brought 1,000, and you're like, made my 10 look like. I tried, but I didn't get where I wanted to go. You have to celebrate your sprouts, not crush your sprouts. You got to learn to get eyes to actually see them, especially you rubies. You got these goals that are up here, and I think it's awesome you have these goals up here. However, comma, you ain't going to get up here by one big flight. It's step by step, one small step at a time. Heading in the right direction is how you're going to get there. It's not one big leap. It's one step at a time, one day at a time. Let me say that again. One step at a time, one day at a time. One step at a time, one day at a time. I can't hear you. One step at a time, one day at a time. That's how you get there. So if you learn to celebrate your sprouts on a daily basis, keep a journal by your bed. Call it Sprouts. You write down 5 sprouts first thing in the morning. These are the areas I made improvement yesterday. Before you go to bed that night, these are the improvements I made today. You're looking for progress. A little bit of progress each and every day makes it happen. A little bit of progress each and every day makes it happen. It doesn't mean I'm going to perfectly perform every single day. No, I said a little bit of progress each and every day makes it happen. We started this with the programmer on Friday. Biscanetti, the second one, where we had that beautiful young man come to this stage, where you saw the result of the fear in his life because the progress was not celebrated. But perfection was the bar. And when perfection is the bar, you feel like you will never succeed. But if the bar is a little bit of progress, each and every day. A little bit of progress each and every day. How many of you can do a little bit of progress each and every day? All of us can bite that one. And that's actually all that's required of us, right? Because he who can be faithful with the little be what? Ruler over much, much more. So it's not only the gift to yourself of celebrating your spouse, but it's also the gift to your spouse and your kids and your coworkers, your sales force. That the little bit of progress, the little bit of progress, that when you see a little tiny bit of an improvement that's going in the right direction. For example, I would have somebody say to me, well, gosh, Danny, yeah, you know, I came out of First Steps and I started making 100 dials a day. But I still haven't closed anybody. Prior to First Steps, were you doing 100 dials a day? Well, no. That is huge. That's progress in the right direction. Well, Danny, I read the closing script 10 times. And no one closed. Did you read the closing script before your first steps? No. That's a sprout. And if you keep feeding the sprout, listen to me carefully. What is a sprout? It's proof as to what is to come. It's proof. It's not a hypothetical. It's not might happen. It's actually proof. It's a guarantee of what is to come. So if there's improvement with a spouse, you celebrate that improvement. If there's improvement with the kids, you celebrate that improvement. If there's improvement in your finances, you celebrate. I don't care how small it is. Remember, it's a sprout. If it's small, it's a sprout. And if it's a sprout, what is it proof of? It's a guarantee of what's coming in the future. It's a guarantee. Hello? It's a guarantee of what is to come. It's not a hope. It's not an imagination. It's already on its way. So write down 5 sprouts. Let's put it into practice. So what are 5 things? Tiny little things that you made improve. And there might be some big things. You might even have some fruit already. How many of you do have some fruit? But some of you, especially the rubies and the emeralds, never stop to celebrate the fruit. So when you don't stop to celebrate the fruit of your labor, guess what? You just get burnt out. You don't feel fulfilled. You don't feel satisfied. And guess what else? Your kids are watching you. Forever being driven and never being satisfied, which again is what? Greed. You can say it. It's greed. Never ever being satisfied. Where is that moment where you go, we did this. We did this. How many of you paid off debt? Did you pat yourself on the back? Do you realize the mountain you climbed? Do you realize the 2% mindset that it took to do that? Heaven and earth had to move for you to come out of that poverty way of living and to actually make progress in that direction. Have you stopped to say, wow, we did it. We did it. I don't care if it's $1,000, if it's $500, if it's $200. We did it. Who did it? You by yourself? No, the whole family made a sacrifice here. So if there's not a celebration and not a reward and a thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for being committed to this. We can be so driven to a place of a fault to never stop to have the enjoyment of what we're doing. You are the one saying, oh, it's going to be awesome when I pay off all my debt. Is it really? If you haven't had these milestones where you've pat yourself on the back and you haven't had a, oh, wow, I'm doing it. Wow, we're doing this. Then what will it be when you write off your first check? You might write the last check. What happens when you write the last check? It might be the same. It's just another day. How many of you have done things like that? It's just another day. One day melts into the next and it's no big deal. Guys, you got to feed your sprouts in order for them to grow. What you feed will flourish. What you neglect will die. What you neglect will die. So how can you feed that? How can you put life all over that? Because that is what's going to fuel you for the next $10,000 worth of debt. That's what's going to fuel you for the next 100 dials. That's going to fuel you for the reading that closing trip the next 10 times. That's what's going to help you do those next presentations. That's what's going to help your marriage get better. It's a little bit of progress. Hello? Every day. Little bit every day. Little bit every day. Little bit. We can do the little bit. So what will you feed in the morning at night? What 5 sprouts have you had? If you can't think of them, think of 5 things you're thankful for. You know that gratitude opens the vault to blessing in the heavens. I've seen it so many times. Thanksgiving, being thankful for what you have. When you stop and pause your mind for a minute and go, wow, there are people who have no shelter. There are people who have no food. There are people who have no clothing. There are people who have no medical. There are people who have no work. There are people who are lonely, who have no family. And it's usually when we've lost something is when we actually appreciate the thing that we lost. But we can be the people that are proactive to recognize, no, I'm going to be proactive in this and take advantage of what I have. Embrace and be grateful for what I have. I don't want to be the one that loses it before I wished I never lost it. So you could write down 5 things you're thankful for and write down 5 things, 5 sprouts, 5 places of improvement that you've made. So who has paid off debt? That's actually fruit. That's not even a sprout. That's actually fruit. That's real deal right there. How many of you have paid off more than $5,000 worth of debt? Can you look around this room? Isn't that crazy? That's amazing. So write them down. Five sprouts. Five things you're thankful for. I want to see real quick my Dynasty grads. Where are you? Yesterday we went through the hardest exercise. Okay? You've been through that exercise before. How many of you did better this time through that? That is massive. That's maturing that's happening in you. That is strengthening that's happening in you. That you don't get yourself all freaked out like you did the first time you did it. Right? That's massive growth. So awesome. Okay, we're going to turn our chairs around one last time. One last time. Go for it. Person number one, raise your hand. Number two. Number three. Number four. Okay, if your group is incomplete, all we can just like scoot next to other people. Okay, just like fill it in. There we go. Here, this is four people right here. Yeah. Anyway. Your wife is not here. Oh, I know that. Okay. All right. So put your hands in for... So we got our group. We got our group identified. Okay. Person number one, raise your hand. Two, three, four. Number one, you're going first. You have 2 minutes to share your sprouts. I want you to talk about those sprouts. Person, you need one? Just start. Thanks for asking, though. Answering questions right now, you're sharing your sprouts. Okay, share the sprouts. Let's pause right now. I got to remind you about the skills you picked up 2 days ago. Honor, eye contact, smile when you're communicating. Okay, when you are focused on a sprout, there is no what I'm not doing yet. Do you hear me? When you're celebrating a sprout, your entire focus is only on the accomplishment. It's only on the improvement. That's it. I'm not where I want to be yet. No, you just neutralized it. You tried to give it some life and then you killed the life. So it's life only is what you're breathing on that sprout. Do you understand? Eye contact, smile while you're listening. Don't lose what you gained 2 days ago. Do you understand? So pay attention. Don't interrupt the person that's talking. We're practicing listening skills right now. We're practicing communication skills. And your mouth has got to learn to get tailored. This is a champion mouth is what I'm saying. That's a champion mouth. A champion does not focus on what didn't go right. Right now, it's game time. Right now, it's focused on what is working. And when you feed what's working, guess what you get more of? You get more of what's working. You neutralize what's working, there's no progress. All right, go. Next person. Okay. If you do your five sprouts and you still have more time, you know you're supposed to talk for the full two minutes, right? So what should you then talk about? You wrote down five things you're thankful for. So the things you're thankful for and your sprouts. Third person, go. All right, number four is done. And I actually got to share my sprouts. That was really cool. Okay, so now I want you to answer the questions that are in front of you. How'd that feel? What did you find out? You don't have a mic, honey? Hold on one second. Can I have that, please? What happened? Yeah, mic.
Oh, there it is.
Are you there?
Yes. Yeah. Go.
When I shared my sprouts.
Stand up, gorgeous. You can say thank you, I received that.
Thank you, I received that. Hi, everybody. I've been coming for 2 years. And without the growth that I've received, I would have not been able to be there for my parents this summer. And that's why I missed so much this summer. But my family was first. But just, it's just amazing all the things that have happened since I've been coming. Doors have opened, huge doors. People have just been drawn to me, and I'm in the right place at the right time. I'm able to help those that I can. I am in a construction industry. I was able to put roofs over 2 people's homes this year out of my own just savings.
Wow.
The most amazing thing.
So this all hit you when you were sharing your sprouts?
Yes.
Like how accomplished you actually are?
Not how accomplished I am, that I'm able to be in position to help others. And that I think the greatest thing was last Christmas, I'm a member of an organization that I currently serve as an officer for. And I was able to facilitate and to take the dream of a 92-year-old man who had built his church in 1956 and to redo the entire exterior of it for him with our organization, and for him to step out of his car and to rise on his own and grab my hand, and tears of joy and blessings to restore vision he had seen when he built that, to see his church was still thriving and that people still cared.
Yeah.
And that was probably one of the most moving moments. It was the best Christmas ever last year.
Amen. 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 Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
What happened?
Oh, man.
What happened?
So this exercise and what you've said has really opened my eyes on how I've been stomping on my sprouts, how I haven't protected and nurtured my sprouts. And it's been a huge eye-opening experience for me and shown me what great things I have done, the things that I have accomplished. I am a good dad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm speechless right now.
We can be so driven and so focused on where we're going, we don't recognize all of the growth that is happening all around us. And when you ignore that growth that is happening around you, it dies. And it robs you of the confidence that you need to get to where you're going. So it's actually, you need to take care of what's around you in order to get to where you need to go. You're a phenomenal dad. You're not a good dad. You're a phenomenal dad. And your goal of being the dad that you didn't have, oh my gosh, Jonathan, you're beyond that. You're beyond, you're beyond, you're beyond, you're beyond. You celebrate Kaylee Sprouts. You teach her to celebrate her sprouts. What about yours?
What about yours? My own worst enemy.
Not anymore.
No.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
You have to be your best champion.
Amen. Proud of you, brother.
It was a great eye-opening experience.
Amen. All right, turn your chairs around and get ready for Hans Johnson.
Okay. I'm going to tell you guys a quick story. So, this is going to be about fear. Overcoming fear. Okay. There's 2 kinds of fear. One is a physical fear. It's a paralyzing fear. Another one is a driving fear that is a motivation underlying motivation. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the first one, okay? Because the second one's a totally different animal. So I'm going to give you a way. How many of you in your business, if you're in sales, it doesn't matter what it is, how many of you ever dealt with fear before? Okay? Fear of rejection, fear of picking up the phone, right? You come to an event like this, you get motivated, you get fired up, you get all the strategies, you get out there and you got to make that call to, you know, scary prospect. All of a sudden the phone's got teeth on it. You're shaking. Anybody ever had this before? Maybe it's a situation that you have to confront that you're uncomfortable with. Maybe it's a physical life-threatening situation. I'm going to tell you one story and then I'm going to back up. I first learned about this several years ago since I was a lot younger. For whatever reason, I had, over the course of time, a lot of training partners and workout partners that I had connected with and spent time with had backgrounds in they were spec ops guys. They had backgrounds in either Navy SEALs, Special Forces, various different things. And I learned something from being around those guys. And those of you that have served in the military, you know this concept, and it's the concept of an offensive mindset. I had met a guy who had actually developed a whole. He did several tours in Vietnam, and he shared a story. He said his very first time in combat, it just absolutely terrified him to death. Like, it was terrifying. And he was so afraid, and he survived that encounter. But he was so afraid, and it was such a terrifying experience, that something clicked and tweaked in his mind afterwards. And he basically made a decision, and he said, that fear of that experience was 100 times worse than dying. I wish I actually would have just died. So he made that decision, and this was his decision. He said, from that point forward, every single time, and this was and the way that he described it, is he said that a lot of guys, what would happen is that, you know, they're marching along, and the enemy would fire rounds from this, and as soon as that firefight would start, a lot of guys would duck for cover, and they'd get hit. Okay, so what ended up happening with him is he had that first encounter, he survived it. And he made this, like, this thing snapped. He made this decision. And the basic decision was, the next time that happens, I am not ducking for cover. I am going straight in, and I'm going to attack what's attacking me. Yes. And he ended up doing several tours, and he survived. And he ended up, and he was a spec ops guy, special forces guy. He came back to the States afterwards, and he ended up, you know, because of this experience, and he saw so many people getting hit, and why does some, and, you know, happened some and others not, and all this sort of thing. He started doing a lot of science and a lot of research. And in his research, what he discovered is that our brain essentially is electricity. And our thoughts, what we think, it's basically protons, neurons, and neutrons. So protons are positively charged, neutrons are negatively, and neurons. Okay. So that's all whatever that is. But essentially, the end result is, and all kinds of science has been done and studies and all this sort of stuff, but the very end result of the whole thing is that that electrical charge ends up attracting to it the thing that's going on in here. And so, and fear So fear attracts what it fears. Yep. Scientifically proven.
Yep.
Proven by science.
Yep.
So in the spec ops community, they call this offensive mindset. In various different martial arts communities, in the Filipino martial arts, they have the concept of the gunting, which is the defanging the snake. Attack what's attacking you. Okay, because it's a weapons-based system, and if you're, you know, most of the training is with the blade. And the first thing you're taught, if you're in a knife encounter, is expect to be cut.
Yes.
Right?
Wow.
Expect to be cut.
Exactly.
So in JKD, it's the interception, and Wing Chun, it's forward pressure. The water theory is another principle. So this is going on, and I'm, you know, getting this, and this is impacting my life and influencing me because of these life experiences and these different people that I was spending time around, fortunate enough to spend some good time with some of these guys, awesome warriors. And I looked back in my life, and I remembered an incident that happened to me when I was younger. I was 17 years old in Hawaii. And I had my best friend Chris. He's about 4 years older than I am, so I think he was maybe 21 at the time. I had my first dive at 15, and he had just gotten certified. And my very first dive, he got some extra equipment, and he goes, "Dude, I'm going to teach you how to dive." And I'm like, "Right on." So I think I'm 15 years old, so he was 18 or 19. And so my first dive was at 100 feet with my friend Chris. So if you're a diver, so I wasn't even certified. So this is the kind of stuff we used to do when we were kids. We had fun. So one day, so this is a little later. I'm 17. I'm a commercial diver. Me and Chris and this other guy, John, we're sitting around one day and we're kind of bored. It's on the weekend. And we're coming up with some idea. Any of you ever been come up with some good ideas when you're young? Anybody? Or how about when you're older? So we get this idea. We had worked out at this place where there was an aquaculture farm, and they had these pump stations offshore. And the pumps were set down about, you know, 30, 40 feet, and these pipes would go down to 2,000 feet deep, and they sucked up really cold, nutrient-rich water, and then onshore they were growing abalone, kelp, salmon, urchin, all this kind of stuff. And there was a natural energy lab out there, so there's some really cool stuff, but that's where we worked. And so our cool idea, moms, this is what your sons do when you're... So our cool idea is we said, hey, let's do a deep dive, right? So we spent all day, like Saturday, planning this thing out, where we're going to go. I mean, this is the difference. We weren't like spontaneous, irrational risk takers. We were like really planned out stuff. Like there's all kinds of stories. And when we went back in August, Danny got to hear a few other ones, stuff that I had even forgotten about. And Chris and I were sitting around going, dude, you remember that time? Oh my gosh. But we would always put a lot of effort into planning it, right? We would make sure that we had a plan and that we thought of all that could go wrong, all the risks, all the problems, right? You're supposed to do this, right? In business, you do this, right? So we spent a whole day planning this whole thing, how we're going to go, we're going to enter at this one place, we're going to go down these, we're going to tie off some tanks at like 30 feet. Right? Because we're going to go deep, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to suck on these tanks, make sure we give time for the oxygen to dissipate, you know, to so we don't... what happens when you go deep, and if you spend a lot of time deep, you get your oxygen, your O2, CO2, and your nitrogen. So there's some physiological complications that happen, okay? So to do that, you can like spend extra time on these tanks and you can like sit there. So we had this whole thing planned out. We're experienced divers. We're diving every day. Like I did 3 dives a day every single day for work, right? All kinds of crazy stuff. So we go down and, is that how much time I have left? Okay. So we go down. So we go out and we do this dive and we get in the water. We're swimming, okay? And we figure, well, we're gonna track this pipe. Now this pipe goes down to 2,000 feet. So we think, well, we're gonna swim along, track this pipe, and we'll go down and we'll see what happens. So Chris, myself, and this guy John. Okay, John's a smoker. Keep that in mind. Not anything against smokers. Chris and I have known each other for years. We don't know John that long, but he's cool. So let's go do this thing. All right, so we get out there. We get caught in this current. We start diving down, and then about 40 feet under, we get in this current. So we're like burning all this energy because we wanted to stay on that pipe. We want to go down on the pipe, come back on the pipe because we tied our tanks off at 30 feet. Okay, so we get on this pipe. We go down, deep. Okay, and we get down there, and we're just having a blast. Okay, I mean we are having fun. Okay. We look at our gauge and we're just sitting there and we're just like, oh man, this is so great. Because what happens is when you go deep, you get this thing called nitrogen narcosis. Okay. Oh, we got narked up big time. Okay. It's called getting narked. So it's nitrogen narcosis. I don't need to explain the science. I don't have time to explain the science. So what happens is that you get basically drunk. Okay. You just like, woo. So we're down there, we're like, woo, yeah, woo. You know, we're just having fun. We're rolling around in the sand. We're looking up. We're playing around. And then all of a sudden, one of us gets this really bright idea of, wow, how much air do we have left? So we look, and I look at mine, Chris. Chris had like maybe 1,000. So we start at 3,000 pounds of pressure, and we're down here. He has 1,000. This is my memory. I'm at like 700, and John's at like 500. So we turn. So we're like, oh crap, that's serious. Okay, that's really serious, and we're really deep. Okay, so we're like, whoop. You know how you get sober really quick? Whoop. Anybody ever been there? Yeah. So we're like, whoop. Okay. So we turn around, we start crawling up that tank, and I'm just thinking in my mind. So Chris is ahead. Chris is the most advanced. He's a very advanced diver. Then there's John and I. So there's Chris, me, and then John. And Chris is up front, and I'm in the middle, and all I'm thinking of is, just one hand at a time, just crawl back up that, just use the pipe, just stay focused. We're going to eventually land. Don't worry. Well, not even like a couple seconds later, I'm feeling this tug behind me. I'm feeling this yank, okay? So we're going up this pipe. I'm feeling this yank. I turn around, and it's John, and he's doing this, which is I'm out of air, okay? And I'm thinking, shut up, man. This is not the time to be fooling around. So I like, I keep going, okay? Because I'm like, dude, I gotta get, Then the next thing is I feel him really start yanking, okay? I turn around and he's really like freaking out. I still don't believe him. I grab his gauge because I don't believe him. I'm gonna look myself. By this time, we're already floating away from the pipe. We're losing where we're at, okay? I have no idea where Chris is. I look at his gauge, and he's out. I don't know if I have enough air to get home. And I have one source of air. This is my work gear. And when we worked, it wasn't recreational gear. Because you don't want all these cords hanging around. We worked around nets and stuff like that. So it's my work gear. I got one deal. Right? So imagine that fear. And for a moment, I'm sitting there, and the question is, what am I going to do? Total paralyzing fear, right? That's the thing where you see your life flash before you and, you know, time stops. And at 17 years old, I did the only thing I could do. Take what I thought was my last breath. Give him my air. He takes it and he starts bolting to the surface. Okay? So the procedure is you breathe twice, then back twice. He takes it, he bolts. I'm humming. So I got one breath of air and I'm thinking, I got to make that thing last. So I'm doing this. I'm trying to create dead weight to slow him down because he's panicking. And I'm going. How long can you make one breath last? Right? We're not supposed to go straight up to the surface. We're supposed to be back on our tanks at 30 feet and suck on those for an hour. Give all those bubbles time to get out. He's bolting straight towards the surface as fast as he can get. I'm trying to create drag, and I'm making my last breath of my life last. What I think is my life. And at some point, I'm out. I got nothing left. The air expands as you go up, so that one breath lasts quite a while if you don't panic. And I'm just humming. Finally, I'm out, and I'm thinking, dude, come on. Share, brah. Share the freaking air. So I reach up, I grab this thing. I'm like, I got to get it back out of his mouth. We're still 80 feet, 50 feet below surface, whatever. And right as I do that, because I'm thinking, I got to just get a hit and then give it back to him. Because I think he was probably sucking water or something already down there. Right as I pull that out, and I didn't know this was going on, but Chris had seen what had happened. He had come back, and crazy amount of time, when I pull my air out, Chris had a second stage, and he slaps his in and takes John to the surface, and I take my time. I'm just like, I gotta, you know, and I'm watching my air, because when we would work, we would oftentimes go into our, you can tell when that, you got one breath left, you know. So I'm watching, and I'm going, okay, and I'm trying to take my time. Chris gets John to the surface. They break the surface. As soon as they hit the surface, John throws up, then passes out, okay? I get to the surface, and we're in a current that takes us a mile down the coast. We're kicking towards the, you know, inshore. We get to shore. The waves are rolling. We're getting rolled up. We're crawling up on these rocks. Okay, John's back. Chris and I swim John in, one on each arm. Okay, he's out for, I don't know how long this period of time was. We get out on shore, and in our minds, grace of God, let's walk back and get down into and free dive down into our gear. Okay? So we walk back a mile, we huff it back a mile, and we go back to where our tanks were, and we go back down and we suck on those things and burn those down. Okay, we had already been out of the water for probably an hour at this point, just because of the time and huffing our gear back on the, okay. That probably saved all of our lives. Yeah. Afterwards, because this all happened so fast, I'm like, how deep were we? We look at the computers. Now, keep in mind, the recreational maximum safe limits is like, now I think it's 100 feet. Is there any current 130? So 130, 140 is usually what it's been, but they usually say, hey, unless you're an advanced diver, don't go past 100. I mean, it just gets really, your air goes really quick. You get, whatever. And then to go deeper than that, you usually do hard hat diving or heliox mix, that type of stuff. So we get back and find out how deep we went. We were at 240 feet. Total dive time underwater, 8 minutes. Death dive. Crazy, right? So I learned something in that, and then later years, piecing stuff together. And the thing that I learned that I want to share with you is that this kind of fear, okay? And for whatever reason, there's been other times in my life, the situation that Danny was sharing with the woman under the car in Spain, that was another kind of thing where it was just like, there's no time for thinking. And the tour guide was like, oh, we got to call somebody, we got to da-da-da-da, And so there's those times in life where, what do I do, What I learned from that experience is that fear, what causes fear, this kind of fear, is procrastination, indecision, and non-commitment. Because while I was sitting there and him looking at me and looking at his eyes, and I was stuck there going, what do I do? I was totally, for that brief moment, overcome with fear. But the very moment, the very second that I made the decision to take my last breath, no fear. Fear totally gone. Completely gone. And so I want you to remember that, because it doesn't matter if it's a business situation, if it's a stressful meeting, if you're meeting with some high-powered person, or maybe it's something like doing sales calls, whatever it is, you guys just went through a goal / seed, looking at the seeds and looking at that, and you're going to come out of here this weekend and you're going to get hit with stuff. You're going to be challenged, right? Not everything's going to go your way. And so that offensive mindset, that forward pressure, is what you have to do. You may not be going as fast as you want to go, but you got to stay in motion. If you get stuck in the swirl, that's where you're going to be overcome with fear. Okay? But as long as you keep moving and you keep doing something, as long as you are in action, so the key is action kills fear. Okay? Thinking, hesitation, procrastination, indecision, non-commitment is a breeding ground for fear. Yes. Paralysis of analysis. Action kills fear. Okay? This kind of fear. The flip side, there could be a different kind of fear that drives the action, and that's another totally different thing. But this kind of fear, one of the stories that happened over the years, I had taught this to many people. One gal named Stephanie, she was, this is a crazy story. She was at home, and a murderer broke into her home and held her and her son at hostage point.
3-year-old boy.
How many of you say that's a pretty fearful situation? And had the boy in a different room, had her in a different room, and all this, had her, tied up. I mean, these are the kind of situations, panic. And there's others, we hear about stuff that goes on in the news. The truth is that, I see this stuff and I go, man, this could happen to anybody. Any of us, And so In this case, she remembered this training.
Yep.
And she said, I'm not gonna fear this. And she just talked to that guy. She said, what is it you want? Yep. And instead of just being in fear and panic, and she was worried about her son. She didn't even know if he was alive in the other room. And she wrote me and she said, because of what you taught. And me being able to deal with that situation with an offensive mindset, what happened was she was calm and gently but calmly but assertive. Within what ended up happening after a few hours is he left. Didn't harm her son, didn't harm her. And then within a few hours later, the authorities caught this guy. She didn't even know who the guy was. The authorities said, we've been looking for this guy. He's done this, 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 this. And they told her, he said, the way you handled it, that you wouldn't be alive today. You know, so she wrote me this letter, and we've had other, you know, experiences and stuff like that. So that's an extreme case, but I just want you to know in business, this is applicable, you know. And action kills fear.
Yes.
Okay? Like even the words of God says, you know, faith without works is dead. What is that saying? Our faith, what we believe and what we think, if we don't have any action behind it, it's nothing.
Yep.
That's what that says. That's what that means. It's a simple principle, but we always take it into a religious context. Faith without works, without action. Action kills fear. So when you guys leave here this weekend, take action.
Yes.
You know? Don't be overwhelmed in the swirl of all the, you know, all the everything. Figure out the one or two most important things out of this weekend. What I call the low-hanging fruit. And focus on that. If you try to focus on everything, it's not going to happen. But there's one or two things that you got this weekend that are the most relevant to where you are in your life today. That's where you put your focus. It might be your relationship. It might be your finances. It might be your business. And that's what you focus on. And you stay plugged in. You stay plugged into the system, into the battery charger. Because remember, it's not what you know. I mean, information and education's important and it's critical. But more information is not helping us. More information is not making us more successful. More information is not making us more, you know. The right information at the right time is everything. But we don't know where we're going to be at that moment in time. So that's why we've got to have a system that we're plugging back into, because we're going to be at a different point in our life, and then all of a sudden we're going to hear something we've already heard 100 times, but now it's relevant to where I am today and what I need today. So don't worry about everything. Don't look around the room and go, that person's already doing this and that person's doing that. And boy, I'm just, what's wrong with me? I'm not getting it. I'm just slow, whatever. Don't worry about that. Just worry about where you're at. Father, what do I need today? Where am I? You know. What is the one thing you want me to do today? What do I need to do? Right? But you stay plugged into the fertile soil. So that as you're moving and you're progressing, you've got that seed being planted back in. The next step. The next step. Okay? Action kills fear. You guys are awesome. Please help me welcome Danny back up to the stage.
Awesome job. Hey, guys. Thank you so much, honey. Hans. Okay, so Brian Niederhaus, where are you? Come here. And are they equipped with what they need to talk about it? You hope so? Do you want to make... Hey, we're matching today. Check us out. I didn't turn it on. I'm sorry. I have a... Do they have a slide? All right. We've got something new and exciting coming up in 2018. Not only do we have a new First Step Success, it's going to be 3 days, but you know our goal, and I want to know if there's anybody here that's going to join us in our goal of reaching 100 million lives. Okay. So if you want to help us do that, we have taken our content and we're making it available in a completely different platform that we believe is going to help change people's lives. We have found, as we've surveyed you, that many of you came from lots of different places and different things have helped you. We've heard clients say email saved their marriage. An email, a simple daily fix that came to their email box saved their marriage, right? So how do we quantify this thing? We want to get the message out as much as we possibly can, and we're going to ask that you help us do that. So we have started, starting when?
It's live now.
It's live right now. There is the new Danny Johnson podcast. So we're making the content available on podcast, and we would love for you to help us make that thing go viral right away. So Brian's going to explain. We have a contest that is going along with it.
So a couple of things. First of all, the daily fix that Danny just mentioned, we've actually modified a little bit, and it's actually now a blog on our website. So rather than getting a daily email every single day in your inbox, which many of you say we send too many emails, I don't know about that, but anyway, there's now going to be one or two emails coming every week that's going to point you to the things that are happening on that blog. So you can pick and choose the content that's really important to you. And if you've been there recently, the blog posts are killer and all sorts of great content that we're putting into each one. But we also launched a podcast, as Danny just said, and this is going to be a really, how many of you use podcasts right now? Awesome. So you guys know how convenient they can be to use content, to be able to listen to stuff while you're out doing things. So you're going to have an opportunity to download Danny Johnson. We'll be posting new stuff up there several times a week. So right now there's three sessions on the podcast. And so we have a contest. Who would like to earn a free ticket to... Not just like a ticket, like you can get in the doors in San Diego, but also we're going to include with that a fast track pass. How many of you guys right here have fast track, everybody, right? This is these are the best seats right here. And then also, what was the other part? MP3 of the weekend, right? So it's going to be a full kind of VIP package. And this will be a drawing type thing. But what we want you to do to get qualified for this is to, number one, go and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Or on Google Play. There's a couple places you can do that. Download the first three episodes, okay? And then rate the podcast and leave a review. That's really important for us. That's the thing that gets us ranking. Now, we're trying to spread this word of 100, you know, Danny's message to 100 million lives, right? This is how one of the ways we're going to do that. So leaving a review and rating the podcast is really important, and then you'll be able to share that with your friends. But those first three steps are critical. Who could do that for us? That'll help us a ton. We want to get Danny's podcast ranked number one on iTunes this week. Would that be fun? As a group, we could do this. Share it with your friends, get people plugging in and using this, and then we're going to be promoting it over the next week through other means as well, but we think we can absolutely crush the podcasts that are out there. Danny's content is awesome in this format, and it's going to be really a powerful way for us to help spread the message. So, thank you.
Okay. Or did I run out of batteries? Nope, I turned myself off. Pretty talented there. Click, click. Okay, so if you can... Do it now if you want. If you've already, whatever's, there's no service. That's beautiful. So what you can do is you can set a reminder for yourself so you don't forget. Set a reminder right now. I actually want you to write a couple of reminders, okay? Set an appointment for yourself, whatever time it is that you want to be reminded to do this, that you know that you'll actually see it and actually do it. So those three things. Brian, when are we pulling out of the hat the winner for the free First Steps to Success ticket? Huh? As soon as we hit number one on iTunes? In the next week or so? So as soon as we hit number one, I love these rubies that I work with. I love the rubies in our office. They're amazing. Okay, so, and thank God we have them. thank God we have them. So as soon as we hit number one, that's when we will pull the name and let you know who the winner is. Okay, so that's one. The daily fix, driving people there, driving people to the videos, driving people to the show, the video, the television show, predominantly on our website. If you send them to our website instead of YouTube, okay? Then we're able to capture some of that information from them. We get to see that. Start commenting on our site. So please send a reminder to do the thing he just said, whatever that was, okay? Number two, will you leave us a review on Creating a Dynasty? On the Creating a Dynasty page at DannyJohnson.com, and it's also DestinyGlobal.com. It's the Destiny Global redirects to DannyJohnson.com, because eventually we're going to have other people doing what I'm doing. Eventually there's going to be other coaches. Eventually there's going to be other people spreading this message. And so you're going to start seeing the name DestinyGlobal.com more often than DannyJohnson.com. It's the same exact website as it is right now. Why? Because we're in the midst of raising up other people. The message can't die with Danny. The message has to go through other people all over the world. Do you understand? So I'm responsible for that. I can't let the message die when I die. The message has to get out and multiply through many very different channels around the world. So anyway, so if you can leave us a review, so write in your reminder, set an appointment for yourself right now. Please give us a review of Creating a Dynasty. What if all of a sudden there's 700 reviews on there? Right on the site. 700 reviews. Come on, let's start doing that. Any products that you've participated with, how many of you have gotten results from Job Domination? Okay, so those of you who've used it, then please leave us a review on Job Dom. If you could just take like 20 minutes of your time and you could go to our website and just start clicking through the products that really, really minister to you, the ones that really have helped you, the ones you've gotten results on, then please leave us a review on that and maybe even post that on Facebook. Post on Facebook, hey, listen, I don't know if you've heard about this, but this is how I feel about this product. The thing is amazing, okay? Why? Because the more people are hearing about it, the more they start clicking, hello? And you're not about making me money. We're building houses. We're feeding the poor. Do you understand? That's what this is about. It's not about putting food on Danny Johnson's table. This is about putting food in orphans' mouths, building houses, water supplies, do you understand? Chad, I want to know how many orphans have we fed? Let's just pull that up. How many kids have been freed from the sex trade? There you go. So 59,000 orphans you all have fed. Excuse me? We have freed 3,194 girls and boys out of the sex trade. I don't know how to read that number. 912,000 people are receiving fresh, clean water that has healed their bodies and has healed their land. That's almost 1 million people because of the work you have done. Okay? And 912 homes have been built. Actually, is that including Haiti?
No, that's the latest
as of Haiti. That's just Nicaragua. And Haity. Okay, so 912, by the time we get to the end of the year, it's over 1,000 because we built a bunch of houses in Haiti also. So 912 homes. Okay, and there's a whole lot more that we've done. These are just the four highlighted areas that we're talking about. We've done agriculture. Come on, guys. This is what it's about. As we go after 100 million lives, guess what? This, more of that, whatever that was, more of that gets done. Do you understand? So that's a team effort changing lives. Come on, 1 million people, almost 1 million people now have clean water. Instead of the water that is filled with disease, it's killing them. They now have something that we take for granted. We buy water in a bottle and we leave some of it behind, right? And these people would do anything to have that. So that's what we are accomplishing together, changing lives. So it's not only our lives are being changed here, those people's lives are being changed there, okay? So if you give us reviews, if you're posting on Facebook about what we're doing, you're sharing the message, if you're sharing a blog, you're sharing the podcast, you're sharing the Danny Johnson Show, you're sharing any of these things, you're sharing our website, then that message is going to continue to get out there and more lives are going to be changed. And that's us as an army that is doing it together. So if you can write a reminder for yourself, set an appointment for yourself, go on to DannyJohnson.com and please leave a review. If it's Prospecting Closure Rate of Millions, if the script books, whatever it is, please write us a review. Why? How many of you read reviews before you purchase something? Right? Me too. I study those suckers before I make a decision. So please be specific on how that particular product, what specific need that thing helped you. Because your opinion matters to the one that is reading it. They really, really matter. So they want to know how you felt about that product, what specifically it helped you with, how it compared to other things. Okay, so the same reason why you read other people's reviews, come on, you be the writer of the reviews. You be the writer of the reviews. Let's change lives together, okay? Next, I would like for you to take the next 10 minutes, please. Hold on a second. We have a big vision. Actually, do you have a copy of that? It's old? Really? You don't know. Okay. Okay, fine. Is it this copy? You probably can't see this. We exist? All right. Because we exist, because you and us and you, we, and our families exist, we have decided that we want to make a big difference, and we can't do it alone, and we know that we have the best people on the planet to do it with. We are confident we have, that's the perfect one, okay? We are confident that we have the best people to be working with. So this is our vision. We know that we have affected the corporate world. How many of you work in the corporate world? Okay. We know we've affected the corporate world. We know that our training has gone specifically, has marched directly into the corporate world and has helped companies become more profitable, has helped companies become more honorable, has helped even companies find a purpose. Find a purpose. They've used job domination. They've used GEMS. They've used war on debt to become more efficient in their businesses. We know that our messaging has helped companies stay alive, not only survive, but to thrive, which means that jobs have been saved. That's what we do. We, hello? We. Are you hearing me? Who? We. Because we exist, we are saving jobs, and we're also creating jobs. This has happened organically. I never intended for this content to go into the corporate world, but that's where you took it, okay? We've also had an impact in schools. There's been many schools that have been started and set up according to Grooming the Next Generation for Success. Many of them all over the world. In fact, that material has been taught in universities all over the world. So we didn't try to do that. That happened organically. The dream of First Step Success when it started within the first year was to have 100 seminars in 100 different cities all in the same weekend, affecting lives all over the globe. That is something we will still work towards. Politics, I already told you, we had 30 politicians at the last First Steps in Latvia 2 weeks ago. 30 politicians that were there. We've had politicians coming through here. We've had clients actually go out and run for office and win in different cities around the country. And I believe there's many of you, that's what you should be doing. Many of you, and using all the things that we teach here to get yourself into some kind of political office so you can bring real change to the cities, so that you can bring real lasting legacy change to places that desperately need it. So we want to impact politics. We are already affecting politics. And not about, you know, getting someone to vote for president. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about policy right in our local cities, mayors, governors actually doing something, council members actually really doing something. Home study, we believe wholeheartedly. How many of you are holding the home study courses in your houses? Okay. This is guerrilla warfare right there. Okay. This is where we are affecting the homes. How many of you heard about First Steps because someone invited you to a war on debt party or a home study of Grooming the Next Gen, GEMS, job domination? Okay, just a few of you. Okay, so the home study, we see that to be, could you imagine if we had an army pressing play together, coming together as teams in cities all over the globe? How powerful that would be that we're affecting the home life and the work life. Okay, the church, how many of you know that needs it so desperately? Right? Obvious, right? So there are many churches all over the globe that are using the materials within their churches, and they're pressing play in their churches on a weekly basis. We had over 1,000 people come to First Step Success and Creating a Dynasty from one elderly auntie getting a hold of Grooming the Next Generation for Success, the home study course and the book, and she's invited her church to come and to witness the material. Her two nieces came. They brought over 1,000 people from Canada. Over 1,000 people from Canada. Millions and millions of dollars worth of debt paid off. Hundreds and hundreds of marriages saved, specifically the two. Okay? Implemented Grooming the Next Gen. Then they did GEMS. Then they've done War on Debt. 1,000 people. That means so many more thousands of people who attended all those home study courses. You got Patrick Clunan, another one. There's many people in this room that are here because of Patrick Clunan. What did he do? In his kids' school, pressed play for grooming the next generation for success. Okay? So we know there's just so much work to be done there. Do I know how to make the whole thing happen? Nope. But we know there's people in this room that can help us figure it out. Okay? So the church and then media. Who has read or heard Spirit-Driven Success? Remember that chapter I talked about, the big picture and your part in it? Never in a million years. It was August 23rd and 24th of 2006 when I spoke that message. I never in a million years thought, at that time I had not ever been in media. Never in a million years. These are the major pillars of influence throughout our world. If we can go after and target these places of influence, this is how we'll change the world. This is how we'll do it. So you becoming influencers and influencing these places. Now, all of those pillars have happened organically. Organically. Imagine if we put some bones and some structure to it. So then what happens? Because we exist, we're going to go out there and we're going to make an impact on all of those places. From there, there's another one you could go on there, is military. Military, clearly. We've helped so many military people. Military families pay off debt. Make money. Improve their lives, heal from the disasters that they suffered from due to their professional life. So because we exist, and then look, that message is getting out there. Families are being healed, set free, delivered. Finances are growing, okay? Businesses are being saved, and all the profits go where? To the poor. So on the bottom of that, who are they? The orphan, the widow, the sick, the poor, and the sex trade? All those are lives being changed too. That whole thing is cohesive. So we need you. Your nations need you. Your families need you. Your cities need you. We need you. How many of you know that today is crucial that something like this happens? So what can you do? Set a goal. How many people do you want to bring for the entire 2018 calendar to First Steps in Creating a Dynasty? How many? One? One's good. Two? Two's good. Whatever number it is that you feel you can do, I want you to write that number down. And you set the goal for yourself. Does that mean you have to be there? It'd be best if you are. It's easier to get them to come if you are. And if you're giving me a year of your life, you're not coming alone. Hello? Help one. Help one, then help two, then help three. Do you understand? You learn it and then help somebody else have the same opportunity. And by the way, you business people, your income is going to be directly related by the amount of people you have at Dynasty in Orlando. Directly related. This raises leaders. This trains up leaders. So you want leaders in your family? Do you want leaders in your business? Do you want leaders in your management team? This is the place that will help to develop them. The skills you learned this weekend, imagine if your community had these skills. Get them to Dynasty. The only way they can qualify is how? First Step Success. They got to graduate through First Steps first, then they'll be in Orlando, okay? So I want you to write down what, how many people for bringing them to First Steps or Dynasty. Next, how many people will I send to the website in 2018? How many people will I get to opt in to the book, First Steps to Wealth? How many of you, that's how you came into us, was from First Steps to Wealth. So how many people will you direct to that book and to the show, getting the emails so that, hello, then eventually they end up entertaining this thought? Would you consider leaving stories on your Facebook page or Twitter or Instagram? Yes. Would you consider? And mind you, friends, we got a big goal. We are recruiting talent right now. We want the best possible talent that we can find to help with this mission. We want the best possible talent. So who do you know? Who do you know is highly effective, incredibly talented? Who do you know who is an awesome marketer? Who do you know that's awesome in advertising? Who do you know that's phenomenal in sales? Who do you know who's an incredible business manager? Who do you know who has innovation just oozing out of them? Who do you know? Because we've got executive positions that we will need to fill. We've got management positions that we need to fill. We've got all kinds of positions that we're going to need. I'm looking specifically for someone to help with the home study thing. That's a big target that I think is the lowest hanging fruit right now. There's people all over the place pushing play. There's no organization to it. So I'm looking for that person that wants to lead that entire thing and just go build that army of people that's getting the message out there every day. So we have a survey. We would like for you to fill it out. We want you to grade us. Tell us how this weekend was. But there's another question that's on there. Go ahead. Leave one on your chair. No, I want to read. So, this is a survey, and there's an extra question on here that I would ask that you would fill out. I want to know, and this is really important, what do you feel is our unique offer? What need do we solve in you? What got filled in you that you think nobody else does? What is unique about Destiny Global that you didn't find anywhere else? Why do you continue? How many of you, this is not your first event? Look around the room. This is not your first event. Why did you come back? Why do you keep coming back? How many of you have been to 10 events? Why do you keep coming back? What is it that is our unique offering that you feel from you? Like, what is it that we bring that the competition does not bring? Okay? And if you don't know, just write, I don't know. On the corner, on the right-hand corner of this paper, I want you to put how many people you want to bring for 2018. What's your commitment? If it's one, put one. If it's three, put three for the entire year, that you'll make that commitment. You'll have that written down somewhere. You'll have it as a reminder every single day in your phone, setting off alarms saying, okay, I'm committing to three. Okay? So, yes. So please just fill this out for a few minutes. And then we've got one more thing. Pass in the forms, please. Pass them in. And I have one last thing that I would like to show you as we're collecting these forms. So let's collect the forms first before. Just get them in. Thank you so very much for doing that. We appreciate that. And by the way, for those of you who was in Atlanta, we handed you guys a survey in Atlanta, and that was a survey about would you actually refer us to your friends and family members. And you all rated us with a 92% net promoter score, which is outrageous. So we appreciate that. That was really, really kind of you and very surprising. And we want to always get better, which is why we have you fill out these surveys, because we're always looking for places to improve and get better. And we are also open to your suggestions about how we can achieve that 100 million lives goal, because we know we are also limited in our own brains. You know what I mean? Our brains are limited. So we could definitely use your innovation and your ideas and all of that. I also want to thank so many of you. I recently heard there's been so many of you that actually advertised for us. There's people in this room that have invested their own money into advertising on radio and in different publications telling people about us. That just blows my freaking mind that somebody would actually do that. So thank you for doing that as well. So you're like reaching outside of your own warm contacts and you're like spreading the word in your own communities. It really blows my mind that you would do something like that. So do we have all the forms in? Do we have them all collected? Many of you may have seen this on Facebook, but if you haven't, being it's Veterans Day, I think this is appropriate, and I think it's a really good final message, better than I could give you. So please watch this. Lights.
Change the world? Start off by making your bed. If you make your bed every morning, you will have accomplished the first task of the day. It will give you a small sense of pride, and it will encourage you to do another task, and another, and another. And by the end of the day, that one task completed will have turned into many tasks completed. Making your bed will also reinforce the fact that the little things in life matter. If you can't do the little things right, you'll never be able to do the big things right. And if by chance you have a miserable day, you will come home to a bed that is made, that you made. And a made bed gives you encouragement that tomorrow will be better. To pass SEAL training, there are a series of long swims that must be completed. One is the night swim. Before the swim, the instructors joyfully brief the students on all the species of sharks that inhabit the waters off San Clemente. They assure you, however, that no student has ever been eaten by a shark, at least not that they can remember. But you are also taught that if a shark begins to circle your position, stand your ground. Do not swim away. Do not act afraid. And if the shark, hungry for a midnight snack, darts towards you, then summons up all your strength and punch him in the snout, and he will turn and swim away. There are a lot of sharks in the world. If you hope to complete the swim, you will have to deal with them. So if you want to change the world, don't back down from the sharks. Over a few weeks of difficult training, my SEAL class, which started with 150 men, was down to just 42. There were now six boat crews of seven men each. I was in the boat with the tall guys, but the best boat crew we had was made up of the little guys, the Munchkin crew, we called them. No one was over 5'5". The Munchkin boat crew had one American Indian, one African American, one Polish American, one Greek American, one Italian American, and two tough kids from the Midwest. They out-paddled, outran, and outswam all the other boat crews. The big men in the other boat crews would always make good-natured fun of the tiny little flippers the Munchkins put on their tiny little feet prior to every swim. But somehow these little guys from every corner of the nation and the world always had the last laugh, swimming faster than everyone and reaching the shore long before the rest of us. SEAL training was a great equalizer. Nothing mattered but your will to succeed, not your color, not your ethnic background, not your education, not your social status. If you want to change the world, measure a person by the size of their heart, not by the size of their flippers. The ninth week of training is referred to as Hell Week. It is 6 days of no sleep, constant physical and mental harassment, and one special day at the Mud Flats. The Mud Flats are an area between San Diego and Tijuana where the water runs off and creates the Tijuana Sloughs, a swampy patch of terrain where the mud will engulf you. It is on Wednesday of Hell Week that you paddle down to the Mud Flats and spend the next 15 hours trying to survive this freezing cold, the howling wind, and the incessant pressure to quit from the instructors. As the sun began to set that Wednesday evening, my training class, having committed some egregious infraction to rules, was ordered into the mud. The mud consumed each man till there was nothing visible but our heads. The instructors told us we could leave the mud if only five men would quit. Only five men, just five men, and we could get out of the oppressive cold. Looking around the mud flat, it was apparent that some students were about to give up. It was still over 8 hours till the sun came up. Eight more hours of bone-chilling cold. The chattering teeth and the shivering moans of the trainees were so loud, it was hard to hear anything. And then one voice began to echo through the night. One voice raised in song. The song was terribly out of tune, but sung with great enthusiasm. One voice became two, and two became three, and before long, everyone in the class was singing. The instructors threatened us with more time in the mud if we kept up the singing, but the singing persisted, and somehow the mud seemed a little warmer, and the wind a little tamer, and the dawn not so far away. If I have learned anything in my time traveling the world, it is the power of hope. The power of one person, a Washington, a Lincoln, King, Mandela, and even a young girl from Pakistan, Malala. One person can change the world by giving people hope. So if you want to change the world, start each day with a task completed. Find someone to help you through life. Respect everyone. Know that life is not fair and that you will fail often. But if you take some risks, step up when the times are the toughest, face down the bullies, lift up the downtrodden, and never, ever give up. If you do these things, the next generation and the generations that follow will live in a world far better than the one we have today. And what started here will indeed have changed the world for the better.
So let's change the world. Volunteers, please stand to your feet. You have swam with the sharks, and some of the sharks are sitting, and you punched them in the snout with love and honor and respect. They no longer are sharks, but they're now a part of the team. Thank you for spreading hope. Thank you for spreading hope. Thank you for every paper you passed out, for the earlier mornings, the meetings that you had, the answering of extra questions that others didn't have to do. Thank you for the expense of getting here. Thank you for how you are so committed to this mission. Thank you so much for transforming lives. Thank you for your hard work, your effort, your smiles, your determination. But most of all, thank you so much for being a part of this vision. We've linked arms with the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and he has mightily used you here this weekend. So thank you again for all your service that was done here at Creating a Dynasty. And can you help me thank the events team for running this event and the Destiny Global team? Run up here, guys, and take your bow. You have met these people. Many of you have worked with these people. Thank you, Mariana. This is an awesome team who is always striving for excellence, giving it their best, and we've been on a hell of a run this year. We really have. Added an extra of two events between Latvia and Hot Marriage Secrets. We did good this year. A lot of lives have been changed this year. We did good. What a blessing that we get the chance to do this. What a blessing we get the chance to work with one another and to work with these incredible people. There's no question that we have the absolute best clients on the planet. There's no question I would put you up against any other person's database. Nobody else holds a candle to you. And you have helped us to work hard. You hold us accountable. You help us and inspire us to give it our best shot. It's easy to shrink back when you're around this all the time. But you've pushed ahead. You had some goals this year. You achieved some, and some we fell short. We got a whole nother year. But from now to the end of the year, we're going to finish strong, and we're going to celebrate strong. And I celebrate each and every one of you. Thank you so much for running and running hard. Thank you for the sacrifices that you have made. Thank you for the prayers that you have prayed. Thank you for pushing through your crap, owning your crap, and doing what it takes to move this mission ahead. Thank you for caring about lives more than you care about your paycheck. Thank you for caring about the mission even more than you care about your own personal desires. Thank you for loving God with everything that is in you. Thank you for bowing down to Him and Him alone. And thank you for putting up with me. Thank you for putting up with me, my shortcomings, my mistakes, my lack of understanding, my lack of leadership. Thank you for your mercy for when I have failed you. Thank you for your grace that has caused you to endure. Thank you for your love of my family and how you pray for my family. And thank you for believing in these people. So take your bow, because this was an awesome weekend. And head back. So my final word to you, friends, whether you're the munchkins with the small flippers, a former shark, or one that used to drown, we've all been there. You now have been equipped to create your dynasty. And I believe all of our destinies are connected. And together, one life at a time, one family at a time, one town at a time, one city at a time, one church at a time, one business at a time, one state at a time, one nation at a time, we are committed to changing the world one life at a time. So you've been equipped with what you need to take you to the next step. Now let's go climb it. God bless you and thank you so much. Have a great rest of the year. Bye.